This is Eddie Mason at a Sports Fan Journal, listening to Stephen LeBron Radio, where even light-skinned brothers can win, even in Toronto, Canada. Let's get it.
He's lying.
Stephen. Radio.
Go let it ride out. It's what the world been missing right here. Best kept secret.
We all evolve from the city of gods. We all evolve from the city of gods. We all evolve from the city of gods. Stuff law, just give me the nod. Get low, get low, live life, get nice, buy ice, buy cars, buy bikes. Take trips, live rich, eat good, get dips, stay hood, stack chips, that's it.
Sex, cars, clothes, money, and murder. From soldier to server, hood hopping, hoping to merge, and rocking. My own pops got me open on burners, no option. Had a heart problem coping with murmurs. The doctrine, no Cochrane. Winning since niggas was whopping. Way when Vakim was knocking. Streets was what it was when thugs was thugs and gun wars galore, going slug for slugging. Choose drugs and all niggas love is love. With the crew wall to wall, I be bugged and buzz. So be warned, it's way too deep to sleep. Niggas keep up. Certified killers creep. Stole this lady, I drove her crazy. You ask me why, cause a man try to play me. So reload quickly and you better hit me while I'm letting this pretty chick get with me. Stepping with 007, better make it snappy. No time to do your hair, baby. Brothers is busting at me. Blunts and bottles pass, but none on target. They want the guard hit, but watch I log it. Low as the dawn, man, it's pawn, so unharmed. I'm unarmed, no, I'm calm. I can yawn, sing a song. I'm the dawn, king of dawns. King Kong can bring it on. Quote is bomb.
Get low, get low, live life, get nice, buy ice, buy cars, buy bikes. Take trips, live rich, eat good, get dips, stay hood, stack chips, that's it. Get low, get low, live life, get nice, buy ice, buy cars, buy bikes. Take trips, live rich, eat good, get dips, stay hood, stack chips, that's
it. Alright everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Today is a special episode just because I said so and because it's episode 25. So I'm a quarter of a way to recording 100 podcast episodes and just upping my internet bills and bandwidth and stuff that my girlfriend can take care of. So you're not even supposed to be here yet, Eddie. Hold on. So best way to follow the podcast, if you haven't yet, is subscribe on iTunes. Just look up Stephen LeBron Radio at the iTunes store. You can follow me on Twitter at Stephen_LeBron, and all the episodes are also posted on my blog where I write at StephenLeBron.com. So, as you heard in the intro, Eddie Mezenay is back from the Sports Fan Journal. He also has his own podcast, the Unsportsmanlike Conduct Show, which you can find on Blog Talk Radio. And he's on Twitter at EdTheSportsFan. So, he was on a radio show last week, the Earnestly Speaking radio show, which I was happy to be a guest on as well on the same episode. And I actually followed Eddie, so he went before me, so I was listening before I dialed in. And Eddie was just being Eddie, man. He was just going crazy. So I emailed Eddie. I said, I just gotta get you to come back on to talk about some of the craziness and some of the other stuff. So what's up, Eddie?
What's going on, brother, man? You know, I'm out here trying to flourish like, you know, light-skinned brothers do in Canada, man. You know, I'm just trying to be like Drake out here, man. A little less sensitive, but still trying to flourish, man.
Do people close to you, do they call you Ed or Eddie?
They almost call me everything but Eddie. Jerk, asshole, you know, all that good stuff. But usually Ed, Eddie. I let the ladies call me Eduardo. And that rarely happens, but I try to let them call me that every once in a while.
So when a girl calls you Eduardo, you know you reach that certain level of comfort.
Oh yeah, you know, and they get bonus points if they can roll the R, because you know I am Puerto Rican, so I have to correct you because I know you're based in Canada and everything, but it's Maisonette with a hard T. It's not Maisonette.
Yeah, I've always had trouble pronouncing just last names in general. I've had trouble with the English language in general, so that's my excuse.
But you're not out of line because Maisonette is a French name. It translates French and it translates to little house, which is funny because my last name means little house, which is always just a hilarious conversation starter, right? But yeah, so it is a French-based last name, but it is Puerto Rican in origin, from what I understand. And or its roots are based in Spanish culture as far as the name is concerned. So you're not wrong, but that's how we're living out here with the last name.
I'm not wrong, just don't do it again, right?
I'll let you make it. It's all good, man. I've got plenty of Canada jokes ready for you whenever you need them.
Relax on those. prefer you to be racist than make fun of my country.
I can understand that.
Yeah. No, actually, go ahead. So we're going to get into some serious stuff if we can. But the first thing, I want to ask you a very important question. And you got to tell me honestly. Okay. Do you think Jared Jack looks like Jason Whitlock?
maybe if he, I don't know, maybe if he like ate him and then like he couldn't digest him and he coughed him back up, then maybe I could see that.
You don't see it though, the face.
I mean, it's there. It's kind of like how Siku Smith and Shaq kind of look like alike when Shaq makes that face. I think when Jared Jack is like, you know, upset, then like maybe I could see it with Whitlock a little bit. To be fair, I haven't looked at Whitlock's face in a long time, so I'm gonna have to Google it as of right now, and I can give you a better opinion.
Yeah.
The Google machine tells me that I see some similarities with the squinty eyes, and Jared Jack probably wants to go run on the treadmill for another 30 minutes just to make sure he doesn't look like Jason Whitlock.
Okay, well, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Yeah, that was vital. That was definitely something that needed to be talked about. So, and I'm glad we were able to clarify that for the people, clarify that up for the people, because I know they were staying up to the midnight hour wondering if we'd ever be able to figure out if the two were related or not.
Yeah. Well, when you listen to the podcast, you might find this section just disappeared during editing. Now, let's get to the playoffs. You're in the Bay Area, obviously. You're from Oklahoma City, so the Western Conference semifinals right now, both series involve what I would call, quote-unquote, your teams. Before we get to the Warriors-Spurs, though, were you at Oracle for all the first-round games against Denver?
I was at all three of them, yes, sir.
Oh, man. Just describe it for me so I can get, like, a contact high.
Okay, so here's the first thing that people got to realize about Oracle, because my preconceived notions of going into loud arenas and stadiums where, you know, I've been to big football games, you know, University of Oklahoma, you know, Cowboys Stadium, you know, I've been down Florida for big bowl games and conference games and things like that. And, you know, I've been in Oklahoma City for, you know, Loud City and all that stuff. Indiana's Conseco Fieldhouse is pretty loud. I've been in there a few times and it's pretty loud in there too. Here's the thing with Oracle. Oracle is actually probably the closest thing to the true representation of America from a demographic standpoint, because, man, you got everybody in there. You got, you know, you got your white folks, your black folks, your Hispanic folks, your Asian folks. You got a good, you got women, you got, I mean, you got young men, young women, old men, babies, you know, the elderly. Like, you just got a slew of folk in there, and they all go hard for the Warriors. And you don't see like you do in other cities where the other team's fan base will have a sliver of fans. Dog, if you come into Oracle and you rocking that other jersey, you got to put the Kevlar vest on underneath, man. You kind of got to like watch your back a little bit. And like, it's very few and far between that you'll see like a Nuggets fan just chilling in Oracle, because they kind of go hard in the Bay.
The one thing I noticed about the fan base, and my friend John pointed out to me too, is that it's all fans, even in the lower levels. Like, you don't see a lot of the corporate people.
You don't. Usually most of the corporate folks are in the suites, mm-hmm. which is cool. But yeah, man, like, you know, you got regular folks down there in them lower levels, man. And you got, you know, people with money up there in them higher levels. Like, it's just kind of, it's a nice blend, man. And it is something that is thoroughly appreciated once the game is going, because pretty much everybody is standing, everybody going crazy. You know how they do the wash of colors with the shirts and everything. And, like, you will literally get chastised if you do not have on the proper colors in your section. Like, people get cussed out. They'll put you on blast on the big screen. Like, put on your dang shirt. You know, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? And we'll basically boo you until you put the shirt on. And I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it's they are really committed, and they are really savvy fans. And I haven't gotten to the point where I just mentioned that they get loud as hell in Oracle. I mean, and it's very cool because in Oracle, like, you know, like I was watching this, like the Spurs game was funny to me because the Spurs, when they're pumping a ton of music the whole game, they're over there commanding Spurs fans to get up and cheer for like certain parts of the game. And frankly, at Oracle, the PA announcer don't have to say much of anything. The fans got it. With the Warriors chant, they hit the Warriors chant all game, just being loud, raucous. You know, when the timeouts come out, the TV timeouts come back, they're already standing ovation, getting the team hype and everything. I mean, just think about how often the players actually, you know, this is a common thing. Think about how often the Warriors players actually have to, like, raise their arms and tell folks to get hype. They never have to do that. They already doing it. So it's like they don't have to, you know, encourage folks to be crazy. They're already crazy. If anything, they over there doing, you know, WWF calls with their ear like Hulk Hogan did, like, you know, mocking them and everything. So it is fun. It's a fun environment. Sometimes you're just kind of like, I can't believe I'm here right now. Mm-hmm. And the Warriors do a great job of presentation. They mix in the good old Trinidad James, all gold, everything, and they hit some Bay Area music, which, let me just say, is awesome to hear a city play the music of their people. They playing Bay Area music the whole time, which is great. And you know, now I don't know what San Antonio would play. That would probably be some blend of Tex-Mex music and John Wayne, I'd assume. I really don't know for sure.
Doesn't sound as hype.
No, it does not sound, you know, you can't be singing, you know, I walk the line, you know, during like the fourth quarter of a game. That'd be kind of awkward. But I'll stop rambling just to say the fact that Oracle's awesome. And a lot of people in Oklahoma City are upset with me that I'd even compare Oracle to Chesapeake Energy. But frankly, I'm kind of, you know, I'm not willing to say that Oracle's better than Chesapeake, but right now I'm definitely willing to say it's on the same level. And I really feel like I need to go down to a Thunder playoff game just to validate my thinking that either Oracle is the craziest arena in basketball or that Chesapeake is on the same level. Because I'm not sure right now. And I don't want to be jaded and just make some, you know, strong decision on which one's better. But, man, Oracle blew me away. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, just watching on TV, I'm actually surprised that you would compare Oracle to Chesapeake because – to me, I thought it was no contest. That it seems like the Golden State crowd is just much better.
Yeah, and to be frank, like I'm, you know, I've been having to look over my shoulder and make sure the Oklahoma City Snipers don't come get me and everything because, like, I really think like Oracle is just on a totally different level. I even think that maybe Oklahoma City might actually be louder, mm-hmm. but I think the Golden State crowd is a bit savvier. There, it's a bit more organic, like. Oklahoma City just knows that they got to go hard, right? Mm-hmm. But Golden State's fans are out there like, nah, dog, we trying to win at all costs, and we'll come up on this court if we got to just to make sure we make it happen. Like, it's a different level of, like, fanhood. And it's not to take away from either one. I just think that they're at different stages of being fans. And Oklahoma City's just eager to show the world that, hey, we have a great team. We want to do whatever it takes to support our team. Whereas Golden State is like, dog, we'll kill you if we lose. Like, no, we're not playing. Like, this is serious.
They got that killer mentality. It's different, right?
Exactly.
You can feel like the hunger. You can feel the hunger from the crowd.
And one thing that we were talking about kind of on the on press row, and I was hearing I was talking to my boy Rashid of Warriors World about it. And there's a difference. You know, a lot of people are talking about how this 2012-13 Warriors team and the fans compared to like the 07 We Believe Warriors. And that 07 Warriors team that I love to death, one of my all-time favorite players, two of my all-time favorite players on that team with Baron Davis and Steven Jackson on the squad. But they had such a cast of, you know, they had all these castaways and, you know, downtrodden players that were, you know, weren't able to be used in other places. And, you know, they frankly had a lot of guys on that Warriors team that people didn't want. or people didn't know what to do with. And they had a lot of guys that were at the end of their contracts and just playing for a new contract. And they were just kind of mashed together, and you didn't really know what you were getting with those guys. And they came together and created a magical experience, taking down the number one seed Mavs and going into the second round or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there was like a desperation by the fans, like, man, we just can't believe what's going on right now. Let's just enjoy the moment for what it is. This 2013 Warriors squad is very much so, wow, this is the start of something better, and we're invested into what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are our guys. We brought them in. This has been an organic growth of the team with so many of these guys being drafted to the team. I think really the only people that aren't on that team that are playing that weren't there is Jack and Bogut and Jack and Bogut. I think those are all, and Landry. Those are the only guys that came elsewhere. And even then, the fans have adopted them so much, and they realize that this is a long-term thing. So I think they're almost a bit more supportive and more lenient with kind of what's going on with this team, because they realize, hey, man, like,
there's more to come. It's not just going to be this season.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I was really impressed. You know, obviously Steph Curry goes without saying, but I was really impressed with Draymond Green.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Draymond, like, I think you know, but we've talked about this before on like online and stuff, but like, I personally feel like I've been a fan of Draymond since his freshman sophomore year at Michigan State. Mm. And it's been interesting, the narrative that's been discussed with Draymond, like, on Twitter, because like, you just don't meet a lot of people that are just fans of Draymond Green and Michigan State like that. But people that I respect have a great appreciation for Draymond Green's game. And I love Draymond. Like, I just think he's awesome. Watching him play in college, I just loved everything about his game. And I thought whoever got him would get a steal if he made the team. But my thought was he would get drafted by a veteran team. I think when I did Slam's mock draft, I had the Pacers select him at 26, right? Mm-hmm. I just thought, hey, he'd be a great addition to a veteran team. He'd be a great glue guy. And he has absolutely been that. He just so happened to be on the team, on a young team, taking that role versus being on a team that I thought maybe just needed another part to help him get over the hump. And it's been crazy to see him grow into that role, because I'd say halfway through the season, nobody knew what his role was going to be. He was still very much so raw and figuring it out. Mm-hmm. And to see those rookies now playing to that level has been great. And now they're at a point where, especially with David Lee being out, they're leaning on Draymond Green like crazy, and he's delivering. And yeah. Something that Mark Jackson said about Draymond is like, there's nothing that we can measure with Draymond's performance that we're going to find in the stat sheet. And everything that he does is based off of the leadership, the effort, and the energy that he gives us. And if he gives us those three things, we're going to be in an awesome position. And he's absolutely been that. And then now he's starting to actually put up stats, and it's like, man, like, this dude is doing work. So
yeah, to find value like that in the second round, to find a rotation player, it's so huge for a team like a Golden State.
Well, think about it for a second, Alex. They got four guys contributing that are rookies.
Yeah,
like Barnes. Like, I think Barnes was probably, you know, Barnes has kind of been a question mark this season, but I think Ethan Strauss, ESPN Warriors World, pointed something out that I thought was, you know, interesting. He had always been advocating for Harrison Barnes to get work at the four. And I just thought he was out of his damn mind. Like, man, he's not playing the four. And then David Lee goes out, and I think Mark Jackson, hearing Ethan badgering him about could he play the four, he went in there and put him at the four in the Nuggets series, and he started going off, dunking on people with reverse dunks, looking effortlessly, doing it effortlessly in the process. He's out there shooting threes, out there defending the opposing team's best perimeter player, which I think is probably one of the more unheralded stories of the playoffs as far as, like, you watch Harrison Barnes, he's guarding Ginobili and he's guarding Parker literally almost every time down the court. If Klay Thompson's not guarding Parker, he's going over there to guard the best player, which I think has just been fascinating. Zeeley is out there contributing a ton of minutes. Draymond's out there doing Draymond things. And then you see Kent Bazemore almost put in the winning hoop inside. Against the Spurs in game one, and that's your fourth rookie, the number 10 guy on your bench, but they give him 8 to 10 minutes a game to go out there and play defense and hustle. And you got to give a ton of kudos to the Golden State general management over there for not only getting those players, but then also for Mark Jackson to have enough confidence in developing them to actually play and actually contribute. And
yeah, because all these guys, Draymond, Barnes, Bazemore, all these guys look like they're going to be solid rotation guys going forward.
Absolutely. I think Harrison will, depending on how his role develops with Golden State, I think he has the opportunity to be an all-star. I always thought that his game was most closely resembling to Paul Pierce, and because I thought he was just really smooth. I thought he was really fluid in what he does. But what always shocks me is that Harrison has this, like, you know, he has this moment where he's just supremely athletic, and it doesn't even look like he's trying. And, you know, Paul Pierce, people forget that he, like, actually used to be kind of athletic for real. You know, now he just looks like an old man with the Galapagos Island sideburns that he has because his facial hair can't connect ever. But he just kind of has that in the moment where he's just like, oh, my God, I can't believe he did that. And he did that, like, twice in the last game against the Spurs. He went up and just, you know, put up a dunk that I just didn't think he was going to put up.
Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned Andrew Bogut. That I was so impressed with him in that closeout game in Game 6 against Denver.
Look, actually looked like a first round draft pick. Looked like a number one overall draft pick.
Well, and, I was saying, if you make the Monte Ellis trade and you can get a guy to close out a series like that, you won the trade because no one's missing Monte Ellis around here, right?
No, I you know, it's funny that Monte Ellis is loved in Oakland, but I don't think anybody's like wishing he was back on the team. I just think that he carried that team for a period of time when there was no one else on that team worth a damn, and he had to carry that load. But, you know, they had to move on. And let me say this about Bogut. He's still not healthy. He's still not where he probably wants to be. And I think if he could just get through this season and then kind of build his body back up, because, you know, he's had two freak injuries.
Yeah.
And you know, God forbid he actually gets healthy and finds a way to give up Golden State 30 minutes a game for about 70 games next season. Mm-hmm. And they got Azili who's developing. And, you know, they got pieces, man. I think that's just the scary thing. They've got pieces. And I'll ask you this, because I got chastised on Twitter for this when I said it. But I want your opinion on it. I made the claim that I think Golden State, top to bottom, has the best young talent in basketball. And, of course, again, people in Oklahoma City must think I'm a Benedict Arnold at this point. It was like, hey, dog, you forgot that you got KD, Russ, and Ibaka, 25, 24, and 23 years old. And I said, absolutely. I know that Oklahoma City has the best talent. I think 1 through 3, they have the best top three young talent players in the league. But you start talking about players 4 through 12, like, you know, they got on the depth chart, they've got two guys at every position that – they're either young or already contributing or doing both. And I think Oklahoma City's, like, probably 8 through 12 probably couldn't even make Golden State's team. And, you know, but you tell me if I'm out of my mind for saying that.
The only teams I can think of off the top of my head that I think could be argued, I think Houston has a really interesting roster.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
And I think Denver, too. You know, they've got some veterans, but, you know, their overall core is not – they're one of the younger teams. I mean, even guys like – well, obviously, Fareed, Lawson. I mean, Lawson's only 25.
Right.
And, you know, even a guy like Evan Fournier when he came in and
played hate
minutes there. I mean, I think Anthony Randolph is only 23 as well.
Okay, wait, stop. Time out.
Time out.
Nobody is going to take you seriously anymore because you just sat here and literally did bring up Anthony Bleepin' Randolph.
Anthony Randolph has been my favorite player since he had that stretch with Don Nelson in his rookie season when he just dominated the world for a month.
You realize he's hated in Golden State, right?
I know. That's why I kind of brought him up to you.
He is despised. They put a death sentence on the man.
Can you tell me? Can you tell me? Like, summarize if you could. What happened in Golden State with the whole Randolph and Don Nelson thing?
Oh, that would be easy. He was the most inconsistent player of all time. He played like he had. Hold on. Let me get this cup of coffee in my hand real quick.
Yeah.
There's nothing in my cup of coffee. He played with the mental capacity of what's inside my cup of coffee right now. He had none. There was nothing there. He was so inconsistent, and then you saw what he did for Denver in the playoffs against Golden State, and he would just do boneheaded things, really, really boneheaded things. And I think it got to the point where, you know, you would see this guy with all this talent, and, you know, he clearly to me, you know, was a member of the Tim Thomas All-Stars, where you see a guy just with so much talent, but he just has the inability to really put it together. I love Tim Thomas. I will always love Tim Thomas. But, man, you know, shame on you for paying that man a ton of money to think he was going to actually do something for your team. And I think that's what's so tantalizing and scary about Anthony Randolph. It's like, dude, you're 6'10 with handle. You got perimeter range. You can do all this stuff. And then you go out there and you play like a, you know, you play like a, I don't even know what to describe you, but you don't play well. And he infuriates people because he plays so silly. I mean, you look at JaVale McGee and he plays so silly, but it's JaVale McGee. Like, he's so awkward. He's already so awkward that you almost just like, you can only laugh. You know what I mean? But
I think there's a better trade-off with McGee. Like, he'll have one of the boneheaded plays, but he'll give you something.
Right. At least JaVale McGee is exciting. He might do something idiotic, but at least he'll do something exciting and put a smile on your face. I don't think Anthony Randolph does those things. And to your point about the young talent with Denver, I would give you some points for Denver, but I think they've got – their talent doesn't all work cohesively in the way that Oklahoma City's and Golden State does. Like, I think they've got to make some real decisions this offseason on what they do with the big men on their roster, because, like, Kufis and Mozgov and – JaVale aren't gonna all work together, and Fareed too, because they're all limited in their own way, and they don't help each other at all. And they, you know, I think I could see a scenario where you see one of them. I think, you know, an Al Jefferson type or a Paul Millsap type would be a great addition to Denver. Yeah. Someone who can, you know, shoot a perimeter jumper, someone who can consistently rebound. Or at least just have a better effect on the boards, or defend, because JaVale McGee is horrendous defensively. Kenneth Fareed can't shoot outside of 5 feet. When Kosta Kufis shot that 3-pointer, my head almost exploded. and Timothy Mozgov is still afraid to get dunked on whenever, you know, he steps on the court. So they just got guys that are they got too many guys that kind of do the same thing. And I think that's also similar with Chandler and Iguodala and Brewer.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap on their roster.
Yeah. They didn't have Gallo. I think Gallo would have made a big difference in the series, but I don't think they would have won the series even with Gallo. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, they got to get some more dynamic players that do some things that isn't already on that roster, and I don't know exactly what that looks like, but they got to figure that out.
I feel like they need a perimeter shooter. Like, I feel like the one thing about the Nuggets is they're not a good shooting team.
No, they're all streaky. Like, yeah. You know, Chandler, Iguodala, and Brewer can all shoot the three, but like, you're not sitting there like, I'm afraid that this dude's out here shooting three. Like, every time Corey Brewer makes a three, I'm legitimately surprised. And I know he makes threes all the time, but I'm just like, I don't think of you as a three-point shooter. Like, so you out there shooting it, like, you made it. Wow. Like, I feel like I should drink now or something. You know what I mean?
I feel like J.J. Redick actually would be a good fit for that team.
I think he would be too. I think he's a great fit. I think he's going to be one of the biggest targets in the league when free agency hits. And it's going to be scary who he goes to. Now, personally, let me say this a third time. Personally, I'd love to see Oklahoma City throw $7 million at him.
Yeah, they need someone like that. Well, would you bring back? Because how much do you think Kevin Martin's going to get in the open market?
I think he's going to think he can get $10 million plus, and I think he's going to get humbled because
I think Redick probably has more value or equal value to Kevin Martin.
Yeah, well, and I think he does a few things differently than Martin does, because I think Martin is a better option for your second unit, mm-hmm. Or if you want him to be your third player on the team, third star, you know, third scoring option, then I think he's a great fit. And I think those teams, like, I think Kevin Martin would be an excellent fit for the Chicago Bulls. To be honest, he would be awesome for the Bulls as a two guard to replace Richard Hamilton. But, you know, that's just me. Redick is a premier spot up shooter. And I think Oklahoma City, you see the type of effect Derek Fisher. Please, by the way, remind me, please allow me 3 minutes to talk about Derek Fisher before we get off this podcast.
I'm ready. I'm writing down 3 minutes for Derek Fisher, 3 minutes for Goku versus LeBron, and then 10 minutes for Geno Smith. But go on.
Okay, cool. Oklahoma City Thunder's offense, you know, people want to make a big deal about Oklahoma City's offense. You either love or hate Oklahoma City's offense. But look, Oklahoma City's offense is the following. We've got two of the five best one-on-one players in the league. We're going to be able to get to the rim, and we can get virtually almost any shot we want. So what does that mean? That means that if those two guys feel like they need to pass the ball and get you an open shot, you got to be able to knock it down. And I think what's happening is, you know, guys like Ibaka and Cephalosha and Kevin Martin are proving to be unreliable when they get put into those situations. It's not that they can't make them, but you need somebody out there that's going to put fear into the opposing team that you can't leave them open. And you see the things that Miami did by getting Mike Miller, Ray Allen, Shane Battier. Those guys are highly efficient out there. And so far, Oklahoma City hasn't had that same type of return on their investments. And getting somebody like Redick could be a great boost in commanding respect out there on the perimeter.
Yeah, because you look at OKC's bench, it feels like ever since with Westbrook out too, the only guys that are really contributing, and none of them are doing it on a consistent basis, is really Fisher, Martin, and Nick Collison, right?
I wouldn't even give Collison that type of respect right now. Not that I don't appreciate Collison's effort, because I think he did yeoman's work last night trying to defend Zach Randolph. Nick Collison looked fatigued by the time the game was over. He looked like he'd been in a fight.
Yeah, he had his hands on his shorts. Like he was beat.
Yeah, he just looked worn down. I don't know if you saw Nick Collison's stat line, but I think it literally said something to the effect of 0 points, zero.
Yeah, and he fouled out too, right?
Yeah, six fouls. Like, you know, I think it was a bizarre stat line. And I'm actually not – I think Collison needs to play more. Let me just go ahead and take 90 seconds now to talk about the Oklahoma City front court.
Yes.
Because the Memphis Grizzlies are proving – they in the playoffs, at least, they have been able to show how terrible and meager and decrepit your front line can look against those guys. Mm-hmm. They got people in Los Angeles talking about we should trade DeAndre Jordan and or Blake Griffin. You know what I mean? They got people in Oklahoma City. Like, people were already upset with Perk, but I think Perk caught eternal shade for what's happened to him these first two games. Because it infuriates me to see Perk not playing or playing so ineffectively, and we're paying him $9 million a year. That hurts. It hurts to see that. It hurts to see Serge Ibaka getting manhandled, literally, by Zach and Gasol. It's no shame to get manhandled by those guys. But, I mean, we gave up a top 12 player in the league so you could help carry us to the promised land, and you over there getting tossed around like a rag paper doll, man. Like, that ain't cool, you know. So, you know, Nick Collison's out there. You know, I could use every white boy narrative ever. He's gritty. He's hustling. You know, he's playing with motor. You know, all those things that we like to say about white players that don't have a ton of athletic ability. But, you know, A, Brooks isn't playing him enough. And B, he's over there just fighting a losing battle, getting elbowed in the face by Zach, over there getting kneed in the shins by Gasol. You know, over there, you know, he's just getting manhandled down there. So, you know, that's, you're talking about, what, $25 to $30 million annually we're giving to our three best front court players not named Durant? Mm-hmm. That's tough to stomach.
Yeah, and do you think these playoffs we're finding out a lot, not for the better, about Serge Ibaka, or is that not fair to say because of the matchup?
I mean, I just think he is who he is. And I personally think he's evolving into a Chris Bosh-like player, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. I mean, like I said before, he's 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And
same age as Anthony Randolph. Go on.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, he is the same age as Anthony Randolph. You know, there's this weird thing about Serge Ibaka where he's like, you know, I still am amazed that he ended up getting on with Kerry Hilson after, like, Kerry Hilson was on with Kevin Durant. I just think that's really strange, but I just always choose to put that in the back of my mind. But he's still very raw. Like, you know, everybody knows that Serge didn't get on to play basketball until he was like, in his teenage years. Mm-hmm. And I just think there are times I'll watch Serge and you just kind of like, he's just like a quarter step or a half step slow in his mental process. And I'm not saying that to call him stupid or anything like that. That's far from me, because I think he's a highly intelligent player. But
I think it's the experience, right? Like, it's just having that instinct and that reaction time when you're on the court.
Yeah, it's all the things that they try to praise Marc Gasol about for being a half step quicker, even though he doesn't seem like the most athletic person. But he's just he's always in the right place in the wrong time, and it seems like Serge is always scrambling to get to the right place at the right time. And that's frustrating to watch over an 82-game season, and then especially during crucial times in the playoffs. And, as much as I like the fact that his shooting efficiency has increased so much, it's almost overkill. We really don't need that from him. I'd love for him to just, like, develop a post game 8 to 10 feet around the basket instead. But Brooks and Ibaka seem intent on shooting corner threes and being that guy. So, you just kind of have to take it for what it is right now.
Yeah, and expectations are different now for him too, because especially with Westbrook out, I mean, you're the second guy on what's supposed to be a contending team, right?
Yeah. And look, here's the league has evolved so much in 3 years, because 2-3 years ago when this Thunder team was built, you looked at what we had with Ibaka and Perkins. And you just knew, like, we had a great counter for what was happening in the Western Conference with the Spurs, with the Lakers, with, the impending, delivery of Dwight Howard to the West Coast, because we didn't know necessarily where he was going to go, but we knew he was coming. Mm-hmm. And we just knew that Perk was going to be able to handle anything that was Paul Gasol, Andrew Bynum, Dwight Howard, Tim Duncan, those bigs and everything like that. But in the span of 3 years, Perk is already a dinosaur, but now he's literally evolving into an extinct dinosaur where it's like, man, we can't find time to play him. For what? Like, we can't get him out on the court. And, Ibaka has evolved into this perimeter player, but for what his skill set is, it would be really nice to play him at the five and let him do things that centers do. But now he's out here playing like a perimeter four. And it's kind of like, man, we really don't – I mean, it's nice to have it, but I would prefer to have something else. Yeah. So – and then you talk about, well, we made this sacrifice for Ibaka for Harden, and you look at what the Miami Heat do or even what the Houston's doing or Golden State, and they've got so many perimeter options. Like, it would have been awesome to have Westbrook, Harden, and Durant all out there playing Durant at the four and really being able to dictate pace, dictate scoring, and really keeping a defensive team on their heels. Because I tell you, if you have Harden, Westbrook, and Durant on a team playing against Memphis, you risk having to put, Durant on Gasol, but you also then could, really fatigue a team like Memphis, and you really just present a whole different set of problems and conundrums for that team. And right now you see Oklahoma City really is trying to match up more with Memphis than having Memphis match up with Oklahoma City.
Yeah, the one thing about Memphis that's really stood out to me, well, especially last night, Mike Conley, man.
Yeah.
You said top 10 yesterday, right?
Yeah, I think I've been reluctant to put him in the top 10, but I think he's absolutely a top 10 point guard. I think he's probably top 2, top 3 best defensive point guard in the league. Mm-hmm. And I think the Rudy Gay trade helped him more than anybody else, because – similarly to what we saw with Harden leaving Oklahoma City, I think you've seen an evolution in what Westbrook's game can be, and you've seen what the evolution of what Ibaka's game can be. Well, I think when Rudy Gay left, more of that scoring onus went on Conley's shoulders, and he's really had to elevate his game. And I was more impressed with his performance in the last series versus the
Clippers. He went. That was a draw. He played Chris Paul to a draw.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Both ends of the floor, he was doing it. And, I mean, yesterday's game, that was just impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's I feel bad for Reggie Jackson, because I feel like Reggie Jackson's doing great work. coming in and that type of situation. But Reggie Jackson has no chance against what Conley's doing right now. No chance at all whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, truthfully, I'm an Oklahoma City fan, but I'm just saying this just as a spectator. The Miami Heat better hope and pray Memphis doesn't find a way to get out the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna just leave it. I'm not gonna say any more, any less than that. But I just look at what they have on that roster with those two bigs, being able to throw Tayshaun and Pondexter on LeBron, being able to stick Tony Allen on D Wade, and then hoping those point guards can hopefully keep up with Conley, and then getting beat up on the inside by Zebo and Gasol. Miami better pray Memphis don't find a way to get out the West. They better pray Oklahoma City wins.
Yeah, because I know Memphis always been a matchup that everyone says Miami would present problems for Miami. And I think especially now, I think the Mike Conley thing is such a big deal just because, you know, guys I think that's going to be a huge factor, the way Mike Conley can dominate that point guard position when they play Miami. And obviously the bigs too. I think that's a way closer series if it gets there than people are going to think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like, yeah, I think if Memphis finds a way to get past Oklahoma City, I bet you they root for San Antonio. Because mm-hmm. I feel like they know that they can keep up with San Antonio. And I think they'd be more terrified of Golden State, because I think there's just a polar opposite effect of what Golden State is as a team compared to Memphis, that you just have this wild matchup difference. And it would probably be an amazing series. Twitter would probably explode 12 times if that matchup happened. I'm just excited about basketball right now. And you know, being a Thunder fan without Westbrook, being in Golden State, seeing what's happening with Curry, I'm genuinely excited about what Memphis is doing. I'm genuinely excited to see what Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green are doing on the Spurs. And I actually think those two are by far the most important players on that team, because they let Tony Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan just do them. And they do all of the dirty work and all the, you know, athletic stuff that none of those guys really can do. And they are scary when they play as good as they do. They don't lose when those guys play well.
Yeah.
And they actually make the Spurs, you know, I think even casual basketball fans that complain about the Spurs, you can't complain about watching Spurs when those two guys are contributing in the way that they do.
Yeah, I feel like the Spurs stopped being boring like a couple of years ago already.
Well, yeah, I don't.
They're playing exciting brand of basketball the last couple of years.
They've always been. Let me take a step back from saying exciting, but I've always been excited to see them play. I think that's probably a better way I could put it, because you know, their brand of basketball ain't for everybody. But again, I think the common cliched answer is, you know, if you're a basketball fan, you like watching the Spurs, and I'm not about trying to argue against that. Because they just play phenomenal basketball. They play smart basketball. Even if Manu Ginobili almost, you know, got cut from the roster for shooting that egregious 30-foot 3.
Didn't Pop say he was going to trade him on the spot? Cooking him breakfast or something?
Yeah, he's like, I thought about cutting him and then cooking him breakfast in the morning. I was like, that's about fitting for Pop to say that. I thought it was good. So, yeah.
Yeah, so here's your 3 minutes on Derek Fisher before we move on.
Okay. Let me say this. Let me take a step back. I hate Derek Fisher.
Now hold on. I'm going to ask you. Explain. Okay, how long has this been festering for, this hate? Since he came to OKC, or like 15 years running now?
Yeah, it's been a 15-year running thing. Like, ever since he's played for the Lakers and just been that smarmy, greasy, slick, you know, savage-like dude that just does, you know, disgusting things for the Lakers. I've always had, like, just a sincere dislike for the guy, which ultimately means I have a ton of respect for him, because he does things to help his team win that many teams don't have. And when he got to Oklahoma City at age 37, I really wasn't ready to have him on my team. I wasn't. I just really wasn't. I just was like, man, I don't want him on our team. I don't think he's going to contribute anything. He's old. He's decrepit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not ready for that. And what he's done the last, three games for OKC in particular? Because, like, I've probably been against him the whole time. And he just makes plays. I think of it as the inevitability of Derek Fisher, because I just think he inevitably will do something to help his team win. If it's, you know, making a steal, hitting a three, making the right pass, you know, motivating a teammate, just talking to him and something like that. And I'm just like, I've never been on this end of the Derek Fisherness that's going on a team right now. I'm usually on the opposite side, because usually Derek Fisher hitting that dagger three against my team, and I'm just like, oh my God, I want to kill you. But now, like, he's doing it for my team, and then I look on Twitter and people are like, oh my God, I hate Derek Fisher because he just did that for us. And it's like, oh my God, that's great, you know. So
so you've turned. You had to change your heart about Fisher.
I have just come to appreciate the fact that this is what he does. And I don't know if that means I'm going to ever really like him. I don't think he's a terrible person. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure he's an awesome person. I think being the president of the Players Union, being one of their lead guys, proves just how much respect players have for him.
Yeah, but you know, he's done a lot of, I think, behind the scenes thing to try to get that position. Like, there's been a lot of stuff written about him.
Yeah, but that's Derek Fisher. I mean, what you just said is typical. Like, you know, he's willing to go do the little things. He probably did some backhanded stuff to maybe try to get to that position. You know, he probably talked about somebody's mama real bad one time. Nobody's looking. And then, you know, all of a sudden he's president of the Players Union. Like, how the heck did he get that?
I honestly feel like a lot of the hate for Fisher in these last couple of years is driven from some of the off-court stuff, too. People see him as a different type of person because of that.
He's everything I just described earlier. He's slick. He's conniving. He's smarmy at times.
You also called him greasy, I think.
Yeah, he's greasy. Oh, greasy dude, man. Just like, man, like, you know, I feel like he'd be one of them type of dudes that, you know, like, I think his entire role with the Lakers, I thought, was always fascinating, because of all the people that would actually feel comfortable talking to him was Kobe. Him and Kobe had the best relationship on the Lakers.
Well, they came in the league together.
Yeah, they came in the league together. Well, yeah, they came in the league together, but there was also a lot of other people that were on the Lakers team for a long time, mm-hmm. and they didn't really mess with Kobe like that. Kobe was the only one that – Derek Fisher was the only one that Kobe really felt comfortable with. And I think part of it was just because Fisher had come through in the clutch enough for Kobe to believe in him. And I think that Derek Fisher was also greasy enough to recognize Kobe's greasiness, that they had a greasiness appreciation for each other. And you probably never heard somebody use the word greasy as much as I have in the past.
Like a grease creation of each other, a grease appreciation.
But they just they're the same. They are some cutthroat dudes that, you know, say slick things, do slick things, but they help their teams win. Well, Derek Fisher does. Kobe does his winning in a slightly different capacity by, you know, shooting the ball 35 times and whatnot. But that's a different discussion for a different day.
Is this what you call throwing shade at Kobe?
Man, I could throw shade at Kobe forever. But my appreciation for Kobe has actually risen in the past 18 months or so. So I'm not going to throw too much shade at Kobe. It's just, you know, Alex, it's just weird to have Derek Fisher doing it for your team.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like if Lane Beer all of a sudden was on your team instead of on the hated Pistons, and he started hitting these random dagger top-of-the-key threes or elbowing your opposing team's big man in the mouth. You'd be like, oh, my God, I love him. He's the greatest.
And yeah, like, it's like, wait, I used to hate that.
Yeah, you used to hate it, and all of a sudden he's, like, on your team. This is the greatest thing ever. Like, it's just weird, and I don't really have any better way to explain it than just you feel like it's inevitable. And these things are going to happen, and he's going to do them, and he's just so happening to do it on my team now.
Yeah. Well, the fact that Derek Fisher is one of the key players on your team is not a good sign.
It is not, but this is what Brooks wanted.
Brooks loves Fisher.
He loves, and you know why? Because you look at that coaching staff with Oklahoma City, and you think about who's the coach and the assistant, main assistant coach. It's Scott Brooks and Maurice Cheeks.
Oh, Cheeks, yeah.
And I always think and personally believe that they look at Russell Westbrook as the point guard they wish they could be. Even Mo Cheeks. And Mo Cheeks was a great point guard. And I'm not saying that to take anything away from Mo Cheeks. But I think they just look at the athletic gifts and, like, the ability that Westbrook has. And they're like, we should do nothing to put a leash on him. We're going to let him be the dynamic player he wants to be. And we'll exploit that for as everything as we can. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think they look at somebody like Derek Fisher, Brooks in particular, and they're like, that's who I was when I was in the league. And they feel like there's this need to have somebody like him on the team. And what do you notice when they're playing crunch minutes when Westbrook is healthy? Fisher would run point, Westbrook would bump down to the two, and they try to manage this lineup from that. And I'm like, dude, you got Reggie Jackson right there. Like, I'm pretty sure Reggie Jackson can come in and do the same things that Fisher's doing. Like, I just have never felt like what Fisher was contributing would trump anything that Reggie Jackson could do. Because then I just feel like, why did you waste a first-round draft pick on Reggie Jackson and you don't have this ability to let the young fella develop? You know, yeah. He's stopping that. So, you know, now, you know, it's almost like, okay, we signed Fisher and, like, he's proving to be, you know, prophetic for, you know, our GM, Presti, because of the injury. And, you know, I don't know, it's never really set well. The move looks great now because Westbrook went down, but I didn't necessarily feel like he needed to be on that team. I think they just got him because it just felt like they needed to have him, and I didn't agree with that stance.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that how Brooks or the coaching staff feels about Fisher is more of an indictment of how they feel about some of the other players on the team and how they don't trust some of the other players to do the things that they think Fisher could do better.
Maybe. Yeah. I think they want him to be a coach on the floor. They want him to be a leader. Mm-hmm. And those intangible, like, things are cool. But I just think those only matter if you've got two players that are equal in talent or close in talent. Right. And I just think Reggie Jackson's way better than him. And I think that Reggie Jackson, even though he's made mistakes on the court, he's done, you know, he hasn't played great, but he's played good. I feel like he's always been able to – he's good enough to prove that he can absolutely contribute, especially playing next to Westbrook. I don't think you lose anything with that, you know. So, but, you know, Derek Fisher shooting the three like he's Reggie Miller right now, and it's really tough to be like he shouldn't play. And, you know, it's just fascinating to watch. I don't know. Who knows? The thing now is, and this is why you think it's kind of sad about Oklahoma City – he's going to have to keep playing like this. Or, you know, Oklahoma City might not have any chance of keeping up with the Grizzlies because he's proving to be the best perimeter shooter we got on the team right now besides Durant, which is insane and scary. And I'm terrified every time I see it. So I don't really know what to do. So there it is.
Well, serious question time again, Eddie.
All right.
I'm going to throw this one at you. Let me know what you think. Would you do a Jonas Valanciunas for Sam Presti trade, if it was allowed?
You're asking me if I would trade my general manager.
We will throw in other stuff.
You want to for
you don't like Valanciunas?
You want me to trade our general manager for a big man whose last name I can't spell? I understand the desperation in Ontario, Canada, my brother. Toronto is in Ontario, correct?
Yes. Throw shade, please do.
There's no shade need to be thrown. It's the Toronto bleeping Raptors. What do I need to say about them? Why are we even talking about them right now? Look, if anything, I'm actually slightly mad at y'all. Cause hold on, let me look up the NBA standings while I attempt to now throw shade, because you have motivated me to throw said shade against the Toronto Raptors, because the Toronto Raptors had the gall and audacity to win five straight and finish the season on with a 7-3 record in the last 10 games.
Cost you guys that pick, right? Gave you guys a bad pick, right?
Man, you guys finished, hold on, 10. Y'all finished with the 11th worst record in the league. And, like, you know, you guys were only, like, let me see. The difference between 11th and 8th was, like, 5 games. And you guys got the nerve to go 7-3. Look, at least the Portland Trailblazers had some respect for themselves when they tanked and said, we just going to tank for real and just keep losing and lose 13 in a row. You guys going to be out here like, oh, we about to get these wins now and go out here and go win 5 in a row. Y'all got some goddamn nerve. I'm ashamed of y'all, for real. Y'all wasn't doing nothing out there. Y'all over there playing Rudy Gay 45 minutes a game last 10 games of the season, man. What's wrong with y'all? Y'all got some nerve.
I'm gonna tell you 3 things, and you're gonna have to guess if they're true or false. Like if what I'm saying actually happened, or if I'm just making it up.
Okay,
okay?
I'm down.
Okay, these are 3 Raptors related local things. Okay, number 1, our PR Twitter account actually tweeted out that we were the first team, I believe, in NBA history to close out the season with 5 straight wins of, I think, plus 10 points margin against playoff teams.
I would believe that. I would absolutely believe that.
Yes, that one is true.
Only the Toronto Raptors could have such desperation and tweeting such you know, inane thoughts about the end of a season that really just had no impact on what was going to happen with the actual season. But yes, I'm not surprised they would tweet that.
Okay, you're 1 for 1.
Praise God.
Number 2, there's a commercial that's on TV in regular rotation here on our NBA TV Canada where it shows DeMar DeRozan signing his extension in the tunnel before he came out to the opening game this year. You think about this. I want you to go 3 for 3. You can ask me questions. Did I make it up, or do you think that's true? Sounds like a joke I would make.
It does. It does sound like a joke, especially you, you know, the leader of the Asians in Ontario would make a joke like this. However, so you're telling me, let me just ask some questions. You're telling me this commercial is on rotation now.
Yeah, so I'm saying this has been a commercial. I either made this up or it's actually on NBA TV Canada during Raptors games.
So is this one of those, like, the NBA where DeMar DeRozan hopefully signs a contract in a tunnel before the season starts happens? Is it like one of those commercials with the sappy music in the background?
Oh, the sappy music is there.
Okay.
Sappy music is there. It's to promote the season, basically. And it's to promote the fact that a quote-unquote superstar has decided to stay.
Okay, I would say that you're incorrect. I would say that this would not be for DeMar DeRozan, but this would actually be for Rudy Gay.
Nope. This is actually a true commercial.
I must YouTube and find this immediately so I can laugh my balls off when the time permits. So please be sure to send me the link.
I will.
And yes.
Number 3, Andrea Bargnani has a local endorsement deal with a company called Primo Pasta. Self-explanatory what they sell. And he has this commercial where he's shooting hoops and then eating pasta after. Now, first of all, do you think that part is true?
I would hope so. I would hope an Italian man would be able to sell pasta in a place like Toronto. Yes.
Yeah, so that part is true. And
okay.
Do you think this part is true? The day after – so this is another commercial that's in regular rotation here on NBA TV. And the day after the season ended, they removed the Bargnani spot and replaced it with a generic pasta commercial with just a white family.
The white family. Yes, I would say that probably is true. Because y'all don't like Bargnani up there, man.
Yep, it's hilarious. I actually tried to email the company to get a statement from them on why they took that commercial off the day the season ended. They wanted to distance themselves from them.
Why so much hatred for? Is it Il Mago? Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, the magician. Yeah, Il Mago.
Yes. I just want to make sure my Italian is as fluent as I think it is. Why so much hate for the Magic Man, brother?
Hey,
besides the fact that he rebounds like a two guard.
He rebounds like a two. Listen, earlier this year, I compared the stats of Andrea Bargnani and Dion Waiters, and I think Dion Waiters looked like a big man compared to Bargnani. That's the problem with him. He's just one of those guys. I don't know how to explain it. I don't think Anthony Randolph, Golden State's a good comparison, but he's just worn out his welcome. You come as a first overall pick. There's expectations, obviously, and they've just all been unmet.
Well, okay, so if you could put him on any other team, what team do you think he would benefit the best? And what role do you think he would serve better playing on a different team?
I think he would be fine coming off the bench in Denver. I could not. You know what? I went through the whole time the trade machine thing that I usually don't do, and it was impossible just financially to find a deal that made sense. I think the best one I found is I actually had to spend 5 minutes figuring out if I could talk myself into Jan Vesely.
Wow, yo, he's been terrible, man.
Yeah,
really?
That's how low I got, man.
We
would take on Nene's contract too.
I would think that he would play really well next to a stiff big, like Houston. Like if you'd be able to get him on Houston. The thing is, how big and tall is Bargnani really? Like, is he capable of playing power forward at all, or is he?
Oh yeah. He started at center for us.
But do you think he's capable? Like, he's 6'11", right? 6'11", about, what, 250?
He's a seven-footer. He can't bang down low, though. Like,
well, yeah, that's my point. Like, my thing is, stop faking the funk and have him acting like he's a power forward. I mean, a center. Like, put him out there in the perimeter. Let him be dirt. Like, just let him be that guy. Let him be out there in the perimeter. Like, he's only giving you 5 rebounds. Like, just let him be that guy. And then, you know, if you got a center like a Sheik, or, you know, even if you put him next to Dwight Howard, like, I could see that being a bigger benefit for him because he helps spread the floor, but he's a matchup problem for whoever's going to be out there to guard him. Because
I correct my Denver thing. You know, the best one I forgot is Chicago, actually. I think if you put him next to Noah, it might be okay.
Yeah, but you're resigning him to a life on coming off the bench, is what you're saying, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, He needs to go to a team. He you know, the thing is, he would be scary for a team that was worth a damn, right? Like a Chicago. But Chicago would never take him because he doesn't know how to play defense at all whatsoever. Unless Thibodeau thinks he can manage him to be a defensive player. Because I have all the respect in the world for Tom Thibodeau. The things that, you know, and I think I saw some of the things that Zach Lowe called out with some of the very detailed things that they do with feigning where they're going to be playing defensively towards players, like having Jimmy Butler like hedge at the top of the key just to make Dwayne Wade think that he's going to be playing, you know, zone, but then he's rotating to the corner to take away a corner three, and like that little hesitation, that little bit of feigning at the top of the key can disrupt 5 to 7 seconds worth of offense for the opposing team. And this is like, this is awesome. And you see what type of impact the type of impact that he has putting that defense work. Carlos Boozer is like actually a very good defensive player, and I thought Carlos Boozer was like one of the worst big defensive big men of all time when he was with Utah, and that's amazing. So, you know, somebody's gonna have to look at Bargnani and say, he's a project I'm willing to invest in, and I can put him in a scheme where he can flourish and be himself offensively, and defensively I can either hide him or I can coach him up, you know, to give you a better option. If the Spurs ever said, you know, Matt Bonner, your services here are no longer needed, and they wanted to bring in Bargnani to be Bonner and play Bonner, I mean, or play Bargnani offset of Duncan when they play small ball, or they want him to lead the second unit, the Spurs could be ridiculous with Bargnani. And they would be just the type of team to take him, and all of a sudden the Spurs would be, you know, egregiously scary once again. But that's just me. That's just, you know, that's just, I just look at those type of teams and you just hate to see the fact that the rich could get richer by adding a player like him because everybody else was scared to figure out a way to how to use him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I still think Bargnani's going to play meaningful minutes on a good team. Like, his career is far from done, but that's the picture that's being painted here. He has to go, though, unless we bring in a new coach and everything. It's hard. Like, he's very separated from the core of the team, it feels.
Yeah.
He's checked out.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with Toronto. You know, when you guys let Bosch go, I think it was time. That course, it had run its course with Bosch. But you guys got DeRozan and DeRozan and Rudy Gay. I still don't think you guys know what y'all want to do from the point guard position. Do y'all want to keep Kyle Lowry? I kind of felt like y'all were really excited about Kyle Lowry, and then, you know, you guys were really, like, done with Jose Calderon, and then, like, I started hearing Raptors fans saying, man, I wish we had Jose Calderon back, but that's just me. Am I losing my mind when I said that, or is that true?
No, people here loved Calderon, and Lowry and Dwayne Casey really didn't get along. It got better towards the end of the year, but they wanted Kyle Lowry to be someone who he wasn't all year. Right. They wanted him to be a Jose Calderon, be a facilitator on offense. They frowned every time he was looking for his own shot. But that's Kyle Lowry's game. Like, he is a point guard by name, but, you know, he's not Jose Calderon. And the coaching staff wanted him to be that. But I think towards the end of the year, given that we had that awesome 5-game winning streak, you saw that we started playing better, and he'll be back.
I couldn't believe you guys gave up Ed Davis. Were y'all just not wanting to pay his? Was his rookie contract up?
I think he has a. I don't think that would have been a big deal. I mean, when you're throwing that much money at, when you're taking back Rudy Gay's contract, I don't think re-signing Ed Davis would have been a big deal for management. But I think, honestly, I don't know what Brian Colangelo's relationship is with upper management here, with the board of directors here, but, I mean, he convinced them that Rudy Gay was the logical piece to take this team to whatever next level they wanted to go.
Good God.
Yeah. And now you hear that Colangelo might not even come back because there's an option on his contract that still needs to be exercised.
Right.
So it's just all this, like, short-sightedness, and there's not a lot of thinking behind where this franchise wants to go. And I was doing a podcast yesterday with Drunga, and I said the same thing, is that here in Toronto, we've been so mediocre with our sports that we've gotten to a point where making a run at the 8th seed is actually something that's celebrated.
Right.
And no one actually looks ahead and says, okay, then what? Right? Like, we're all happy that, you know, if we bring back this team next year, if Valanciunas develops, if Terrence Ross works himself into the rotation, everything, if we win 43 games and we get the 8th seed and we take Miami to 5 games, this city will be celebrating, man.
What?
Hey, you don't even need to throw shade. I got this.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is like, those drafts, like those non-LeBron, you know, some of those drafts, like the Durant draft, the Derrick Rose drafts, you know, in the 2000s, man, like, they definitely boosted franchises. And then you look at, like, the 05 draft with Bogut, and, like, Milwaukee got nothing from that, right? You guys in 06 got Bargnani, and you guys got nothing from that. And you look at the draft, and, like, you see some of the guys in that draft now. I mean, you got the number 8 pick in the draft on the team now with Rudy Gay. You know, but Brandon Roy was there at 6. LaMarcus Aldridge went there at 2. Like, you know, it was a pretty weak draft. So, like, you know, I don't think anybody's going to be like, you guys made a poor choice in getting, you know, Bargnani, but – some of these drafts, when you finally land that number 1 pick in the draft or number 2 pick in the draft, and there's just nothing there, like, I think this draft coming up is going to be like that, man. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to end up getting the number 1 pick in the draft, and they're just going to be like, did we really advance our franchise for the better?
And I don't know if Nerlens Noel is going to be that guy. And I don't know if there's anybody else in the draft where you look at 5 years later. Like, 5 years later, somebody's going to be like, the number 9 pick in the draft was probably the best player. And, like, nobody would have thought that at the beginning. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate for a team like Toronto. And I think it's ended the existence of other franchises. It's made them really tough for them. They dug such a big hole that it's, you know, it's hard for them to get out of it. So, you know, I think it's just – you think you guys just have a run of bad luck. And
no, don't blame it too much on luck. It's we've been pretty mismanaged.
Yeah. Yeah, when you have bad luck and bad management, then you've got a what they call a cluster. I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on here, but you've got a big cluster. So there it is.
A clusterfuck?
Yes, that is the word. You know, a dumpster fire, a clusterfuck. You know, it's you guys are getting mollywopped in the trenches. It's really bad for y'all right now. And I genuinely feel bad for y'all because the one thing I will say, now I know it's been 13 years since, like, you know, I really was watching the Raptors playing elite basketball. But, yo, it was pretty live in Toronto when Vince Carter was helping y'all in the playoffs. And it was you guys doing work, especially against, you know, the Raptors Sixers series when Vince and Iverson were trading 50-point games. Like, those games were legitimately electrifying, not just because of the performance, but
we have a very underrated home crowd. It's right. Just, there's been nothing. We haven't been able to show ourselves on the national stage, right?
Right. I mean, think about what I just said. It's been literally 15. I think what was that, the 2000 series?
With yeah. Hey, listen. I'm 28 now. That series happened when I was in grade 10 in high school.
I just find it hilarious that you call it grade 10. But yes, I was.
What do you guys call it?
I was a junior. I wasn't a grade 11. So I mean, yeah, like I'm right there with you, man. You know, I was out there trying to find, you know, the Puma Vince Carter shoes to wear back in the day.
I was wearing Rock-A-Wear velour suits, trying to be someone else that I wasn't.
Please post photos of this. Like, this is.
I was like going to calculus class, getting my 90s. In all my math classes, while wearing this blue and white Rock-A-Wear velour suit,
like Twitpic, we need photos of this. Absolutely,
I'll get in the yearbook, man. It's in the yearbook.
So, yeah, you know, like you got to understand, I was probably the guy that like was proud that I could wear a jersey to school every day and it'd be like a different jersey. I was that guy. Like I had all the football and basketball. I had the FUBU jerseys and I had like
the FUBU jerseys with the city at the front.
Yeah, I had the Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Yeah, I had all those, dude. I had the Majestic. Like, I had a Carolina Blue Atlanta Braves jersey. Like, dog.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, you know, the Carolina colors and, like, especially the North Carolina, the Tar Heel stuff was really hot back then.
Son, they made Maya and Jay-Z made a classic talking about Carolina Blue fitted, Carolina Blue.
Exactly.
Everything. It was great. Like, we was out there just buying North Carolina everything. And North Carolina wasn't even great then. Like, I think that was the Bill Guthridge era. And, you know, outside of Julius Peppers, you know, helping that team go on a magical run to the Final Four, like, you know, they weren't hitting like that. But we was wearing Carolina Blue everything like it was going to go out of style. And, oh, wait, it actually did go out of style. So there it is.
And the throwback jerseys were a big thing. The throwback and the high school jerseys. Because the mellow jersey was hot.
Dude, I got it in my closet right now.
Yeah, that was a big thing. Remember the Alex English, the Nuggets, the rainbow colors?
Dude, you know, the funny thing is, man, I only had, you know, a few throwback jerseys because I just wasn't, you know, because you could get so many fraudulent jerseys.
Yep.
Or, you know, like the low. But, you know, man, you might have the number fall off while you're in class. And, you know, we might wash it, it'll change colors. Like, you know, you don't want them type of problems, man. You know, I'm not about that life, so.
My dad bought me my first pair of Jordans when I was 7.
Yeah.
When we were still living in Hong Kong. And, you know, it took me, I had those shoes with me until, like, for like 10 years. And I was cleaning out my closet when I was, like, 15, 16. And that's when I realized it was spelled Jordon.
Wow.
I was so proud of those shoes.
Hey, fine. You can't find, you know.
I just threw shade at my whole childhood.
No, but it's okay. Like, it's your childhood, man. You got to take ownership of that. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, dude. Like, you know, the fact that my mom was not about that going to the mall life to buy me clothes. And yeah. So we had to, like, I had to go to the Walmart or the Kmart. And, you know, I was like, you know, I've never been a skinny dude. So I was having to buy, like, the Husky jeans. I was in the Husky jeans section for real. Because, like, as a kid, you don't really get it. But, like, you know, like, the Husky section is for the larger kids. And I was having to get them jeans. But, like, the jeans was real narrow fitting. And, like, I was trying to, like, kind of sag my jeans a little bit. So you had to, like, cut slits at the end of the pants. You know what I'm saying? Like, to give them that good effect on your shoe.
Yeah.
And my mom would cuss me out because my mom would be like, boy, I just spent $20 on these jeans and you over here cutting them up. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying to make them look cool. And my mom would then like cuss me out. I'm like, don't you ever ruin those jeans I just bought for you brand new. And so then I'd have to like suffer for like 2 weeks before I felt like they wasn't new no more. And yeah. Then I could cut them. And then my mom would be upset and I could be grounded for like a week. And then she said, I ain't buying you no more clothes. And yeah, it was a struggle. It was a struggle.
Hey, man. This is great back then, you know. What was it? Fat Farm, Pele, Averex.
The Averex jackets, man. I definitely couldn't get any of them. My mama wasn't spending that money, man.
I was so proud when I bought this one Averex turtleneck, man. It was like a black and orange combo. Like, man, like I wore that to school probably 3 times a week, man. I thought I was a shit.
What did your parents think of you as a child? Like, I'm pretty sure they were, like, partly terrified.
No, you know what? Listen, like, I was actually just a quiet, like, regular kid. Because, you know, sure, you know, I probably thought I was black with the way I dressed. But you know, like, I did good at school. I was, like, the typical, like, Asian guy. Like, the Asian kid.
You were the typical Asian kid, immersed in black.
Except I might have, you know, tried to wear a bandana under my hat in like grade 9, but you know, we've all been there.
Yes, absolutely. We've all been there. Wait a second. I never did that ever. Like, yes. Which is the funny thing about this story. Like, I've never owned a velour jumpsuit in my life. As a matter of fact, I probably was that kid wearing polo and like, you know, wearing like button up shirts to school, like being that kid, you know, wearing polo shirts and button up shirts and, you know, being like, you know, I was almost a preppy kid in school, even though I had no money. But like, you know, like that's just how my mom was sending me to school and like how I was dressing when I went to school, when I wasn't able to wear jerseys to school every day.
I think the Averex turtleneck was like my way. Like that was the only way I really expressed myself.
Yeah, you reached the peak there with that, bro. Like, that's epic. I can't even say I went that far with my dress. Like, that's aggressive. Like, I didn't even know. As a matter of fact, until you told me, I didn't even know those things actually existed. So I'm, like, really impressed right now. Like, I need to see the malls y'all got in Toronto so I can, like, understand y'all's fashion game for real.
Well, a lot of those places that we went to, obviously, it was bootleg gear, right?
Yes,
we like me and my friends, like it was in a not so great area of the city, and you know, like we'd go in there, try to negotiate with people, and then we're like, oh my god, this guy's got like one arm, like we better go. Like there was dangerous, not safe looking people in there, but we had to go in there, you know, throw a couple hundred of our allowance on a velour suit.
It is amazing. A kid from, you would think the kid who grew up in Oklahoma and the kid that grew up in, at what part did you grow up in, like the city of Toronto, or were you in like Mississauga?
Like, how the hell do you know Mississauga?
I you know, or is it like Hamilton? Like I think I know about the geography of the Toronto.
I grew up in the suburbs. It's a city called Markham.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but
it's
like,
kind of like a Mississauga. It's like a Mississauga, if you know Mississauga. Yeah.
Okay. And mind you, I've never been there. I just have a lot of people that I know are either living there or from there. And like, they're all like waiting for me to come visit Toronto at some point. And I'm like,
do you know people from Scarborough?
I know of Scarborough. I don't think I could recall anybody off the top of my head, but I know of Scarborough. Yes.
Paul McGlure is from there.
Oh my God. The worst NBA All-Star of all time.
Oh, yeah. He averaged like 10 and 10, right?
Yes. And I'll repeat it. The worst NBA. Didn't he start that All-Star game, or am I
sure? Yeah. You know how people were giving everyone a lot of crap, the league a lot of crap for removing the center position this year on the All-Star ballot?
Yes.
But what about Jamal McGlure? They should have removed it that year.
Yeah. You know, but people see, that was too long ago. Like, people weren't ready for that. You know, that's when Jamal McGlure was playing for Miami, and, like, people really still didn't pay any attention to Miami. And, you know, I don't even, to this day. Because if he started, no. Well, he got voted by the coaches because I think Alonzo Mourning was.
It was probably an injury replacement, yes.
Yeah, I think we could probably, the Google machine would help us a ton right now, so I'm going to put it to use. But, yeah, man, like, that was just, like, what the hell was he doing there? I think that was the same year that Anthony Mason was on the All-Star team, which, as far as I'm concerned, I'm never going to complain seeing Anthony Mason on the All-Star team because he's awesome. But, you know, still, what is this life that we live where Jamal McGlure is starting in the All-Star game? It's really ridiculous.
But what the hell were we talking about? We were talking about Mississauga or something.
Well, yeah, we were just talking about the fact that me coming from Oklahoma and you coming from, you know, an urban sprawl of Toronto, that our dress styles would be so radically different, which is awesome.
Like, you would think I would be buttoned up.
Yes. I don't know what we think. I don't know. I just, you know, it just shows how our childhoods are radically the same, radically very different, yet are also the same. Because we all watched and did the same stuff. But, you know, our environment, it's like Jim Jones says, you know, we're just a product of our own environment. And, you know, it's kind of scary to hear the way you came up. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, you sound like so many of the people I know, but you like in another country. It's great.
Yeah. Hey, last thing before I let you go. Since we're speaking about fashion and dress code.
Oh, my God.
Give me 5 minutes on the Geno Smith thing.
I don't have 5 minutes to give you on Geno Smith. I have... just, I don't have any more rage for Geno Smith. I have been on 3 podcasts now talking about my how disappointed I am in Geno Smith. But for those of you who are unaware, Geno Smith, and when you say Smith, it's S-M-I-F-F. I think he has earned the distinction to be called Smith, like J.R. has been called now J.R. Smith. Because I don't know who this J.R. Smith person is, or Geno Smith person is, but Smith with 2 F's at the end, that's the only way I can recognize that man at this point, because this dude had the gall and the audacity to show up at the NBA, at the 2013 NFL draft, and, you know, let's talk about his first day at the draft when the man thought he was going to be drafted. This man came to the green room wearing this rejected suit that John Travolta probably tried to wear on the set of Saturday Night Live back in, like, 1979 when he's over here trying to be a disco sensation, with this, like, extra, like, eccentric design on his lapel. Like, it was like a two-tone black. And I'm like, how do you have on 2 different shades of black? Like, that seems impossible. Like, the color is black, you know. But he found a way to get black and black as hell on his suit at the same time. I just thought that was amazing. Right. And then he's sitting there and he's like plummeting down the draft board and he starts to look despondent as hell. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, dude, this ain't the last round of the draft. It's the first round of the draft. You gonna get drafted. Where are your friends at? Where is your mama to tell you it's gonna be okay? Stop sitting there looking all pitiful and pouty and pick your head up. Like, I was really upset with him, right? But I mean, I understand him being sad, so I'm not gonna throw too much shade at him for it, but I still wanted to pick his head up. But fine, you're upset. So he's like, man, I ain't coming back to the draft. I'm not coming back. Like, I'm going to watch it at the crib or the hotel room or whatever. And then this dude decides, okay, I'm going to come back to the draft. Okay, cool, you coming back to the draft. This dude decides he's going to show up to the draft wearing a sweater that he probably went over to Burlington Coat Factory, TJ Maxx, Nordstrom Rack, Marshalls, Ross, K&G, you know, somewhere where they got, like, the secondhand sweaters that you can get for, like, $20, and got this polo sweater off the rack for, like, $20. I bet it still had the XL sticker on it. And he going up there in the draft with the damn sweater, shirt, and tie on. And his collar was all overlapping the sweater, his tie. wasn't all the way tied up. He just looked disheveled. He looked like my boy Kenny said, he looked like he's about to give a presentation in class on the three reasons why the economic structure in Israel isn't going to work in 20 years. Like, he just went up there like he was about to do some cockamamie presentation at the NFL draft, and then he went up there looking like an ass. And that's what it was. He went up there looking like an ass. As a man, there are certain times where you know you are supposed to put on a damn suit. Put on a suit for a wedding, put on a suit when you go to any formal dance, and you go to when you go to formal church events, you put on a suit. When you go into any legal affair, you put on a suit. There are just certain times you need to put a suit on. When you go to an interview, you put on a suit. When you go to the NFL draft, Alex, you put on a goddamn suit. Don't go up there looking like an ass, embarrassing your mama, embarrassing the people that stick up for you over there wearing a sweater that you got at TJ Maxx the other day. Dog, you could have put on that same John Travolta Saturday Night Live suit on from last night, just put on a different shirt and tie combination, and we wouldn't have been no worse the wiser. We'd have been okay. You'd have been okay with that. But no, you want to go over there and put on, you probably had the XL sticker still on the back.
I think, here's what I want to do. I'm going to find the picture of me in my Averex turtleneck.
Yes.
And I'm going to put it side by side with this beige, was it beige colored sweater that Gino was wearing with a blue dress shirt underneath. We're going to do it side by side, and I want you to ask your followers to vote. To see who wore it better or who is more fashionable.
We can do this. And you know why? You know why we can do this? Because to me, personally, if you were going to go up to the stage not giving a damn, see, that's what he get for not giving a damn. Because he went up there not giving a damn, and then he went to a not giving a damn football team with the New York Jets. And I feel like he kind of went up there and got what he deserved, going to a clusterfuck of a football team, going to the New York bleeping Jets. I hope Rex Ryan gives him all the snacks he wants and goes over there and he figures out the way to make it work. Because for the record, Alex, we want to see Geno Smith succeed. We genuinely do. We actually think he can play football. But man, yeah. I'm so glad he's not on my football team right now. I really am glad he's not on my football team right now because I would be frustrated. I would not feel like my future is bright if he was the quarterback of my football team. So absolutely get the Averex sweater, put it side by side next to Geno Smith with two double Fs, and we can make this happen. I'm more intrigued. And look, my point was that I was going to try to make before I rambled again was, dude, if you're going to go up to the stage and not give a damn, you might as well went up there in a wife beater, some hooping shorts, and some Timberlands on, and been like, what up, and give Roger Goodell the dap, but just kept it moving. Like, if you don't go there and not give a damn, don't give a damn for real.
You can't be halfway, right? You can't be a halfway thug.
No, man. You know, hey, what Mobb Deep say? Ain't no such thing as halfway crooks, man. You can't be up there going there halfway, man. You're going to either have to go all the way or don't go at all. And that's why I was disappointed in him.
And one last thing before I let you go.
Yes, sir.
How do you spell women's?
Oh, yeah. WIMMINZ.
And women. Where did that spelling come from?
I would be lying if I could give you a real origin. Like, I think it'd be cool if I said, yeah, I heard it from this dude named Slick Finger Watson when I was down in Memphis back in like 2003, and he's telling me how he navigates the streets of North Memphis while eluding the cops and dealing with his women's on the side. Like, I feel like that'd be a cool story, but unfortunately I could not validate that story. So I'm just going to say that the origins probably came from Twitter of some sort. And I saw it scroll down my timeline one time and I just stole it. Like, you know, music you steal on Napster back in the day. Just stole it and claimed it as my own.
That's my favorite misspelling of a word.
It's an evolution of the word, my brother. It is not a misspelling. It is an evolution of the spelling.
I don't know. Something about the double M just gets to me.
Yeah, and the Z. I mean, if you can add a Z to anything, it either makes it cool or slutty. That's one of the two ways. You know, it's good.
Andy, next time you come on, we should do like a racial draft or something.
You said that the last time.
I know, but this time we had got caught up with all this other stuff, man. The velour suits got in the way.
Velour suits always get in the way. It doesn't matter what you're doing. They're always going to get in the way.
Used to roll up my socks too, man. Like, tucked it in. Yeah.
What is wrong with you, man? Oh my God! Like, you are such a misguided youth. back in the day. Like, I feel bad. Like, this is like, it was totally awesome. Like, this I just need to see all the photos so I can laugh with you. I would never laugh at you, but I would absolutely laugh with you at this.
Next time I go to my parents' place, I am going to dig up those photos for you, man.
Yeah, and you know what the bad thing is? Let me tell you something. We were all wayward youths back in junior high and high school. I mean, we were over here thinking that, like, you know, Jewel Santana wearing Lot 29 t-shirts was, like, cool as hell. Like, we were doing that. We were wearing those weak-ass shirts with Bugs Bunny on them, thinking we was some G's. We were some borderline thugs. Like, we thought that was it. And, like, our mama was probably looking at us like, I know this boy don't think he look cool wearing a tall T4XL t-shirt with, like, Daffy Duck looking hard on the t-shirt. Like, it's not possible. It's not possible for that to happen. You know, but we were doing that. We were doing that, and we were serious. Like, you couldn't tell us nothing. Like, we were wearing all-white jeans to class. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, that was a thing. Like, people were wearing, like, all-white jeans. Like, for whatever reason, we thought that shit was fly. Like, we were really doing that. Like, we were like, we're going to wear all color-coordinated everything. Especially with, like, Jordan and the Bulls stuff. We wear black and red shirts, black and red shorts, black and red J's. Over here looking like, you know, we about to be banging on the set back in, like, Inglewood somewhere. Like, it was really ridiculous. Like, this is stuff that we were really doing. And, like, nobody thought this was bad.
No, you know what? Like, you know how, like, now, like with, like, we write, we do our podcast. That's our way of expressing ourselves.
Yes.
Back then, that Looney Tunes t-shirt with, like the Tasmanian devil with a gun in his hand. That's the way you express yourself.
Yeah, man. Right? Like, I would express myself wearing a three-colored headband to class. I was wearing that like religiously. That was like standard operation and procedure for my wardrobe. I got to get this gold and blue headband because it's going to go well with this tall tee. I got a foghorn leghorn looking like a G on my Lot 29 t-shirt. And I'm going to wear these white jeans with it, and I'm going to be out here looking hard, going to class. Like, that's what I'm about to do.
Hey, I don't regret a thing, man.
No, I don't. Absolutely not. I absolutely do not. Absolutely do not regret a thing. In fact, I'm looking forward to seeing my children make their own wayward decisions, thinking that wearing, you know, I feel like in 2030 or so, like, kids are going to be wearing, like, cut-off jeans again. And wearing jorts and, like, it's going to be in style or something. Like, we don't even know what it's going to be at that point. And I'm just terrified but excited to, like, see the evolution of fashion, to see what my kids are wearing. Because, like, kids now are wearing skinny jeans and sagging in them. And I'm like, that's terrifying. Like, at least when we were sagging, like, we had the decency and respect to wear, like, baggy as hell jeans. Like, good grief. Like, at least you couldn't, like, see through the prints of the jeans, dog. Like, don't nobody want to see all that. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm just saying, at least we had the respect to wear a tall tee along with our baggy jeans. Like, yo, at least we tried to cover up a little bit. You over here wearing midriff shirts and skinny jeans. Like, what is you doing? Like, I don't feel like that's a quality decision to be making, but yet that's what the kids do nowadays, and I gotta let them make it.
Hey, listen, I promise you, next time you come on, we're going to work out. I'll email you. We'll work out the details on the racial draft format.
Okay, so we're going to have to. So who's going to be our.
Yeah, because I'm thinking we're going to need more representatives, right?
Yes. I mean, we're going to need Hispanic representation. We're going to need the Caucasian delegation as well. You know, I would even go so far as to say, you know, we probably need, like, a female representation as well, just, you know, for equality's sake. And we can make this work, man. And I can be, look, I can go both ways, dog. I can play the Hispanic vote, or I can play the African-American side. Like, I can do it. I'm with you either way.
Yeah, we might got to do that on, like, a Google Hangout or something.
Man, I consider it done.
Perfect, man. Hey, listen, coming on again, follow Eddie. I'm not going to pronounce his last name because he threw shade at me for it. Follow Eddie on Twitter at The Sports Fan. Check out his work at his website, The Sports Fan Journal, and look up the Unsportsmanlike Conduct Show on Blog Talk Radio. Anything else?
Yeah, man. Let the people know that the people want to see Alex Wong writing on The Sports Fan Journal.
You gonna call me out?
Yeah, I'm gonna call you out on your own show.
I'm gonna edit myself out on my own show, but go on.
That'll be cool. This is gonna be the 30 seconds where we give praise to Alex because he's doing a great job with his podcast. doing awesome work writing. I saw him doing some work over at Classical a few months ago. I meant to give him some props for that. And you know, hey man, you got a lot of promise and a lot of future. And I know we're about the same age, but you know, I feel like I can still call you young fella. So young fella, man, we're looking forward to seeing you doing more. And I'm just always glad to work with you, man.
Okay, well, stay on the line, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right.